Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Single speeds, there are three speeds at least. So you got sit down and pedal,
uh-huh.
Stand up and pedal,
uh-huh.
Get off and push,
uh-huh.
And then there's a secret one where you F everything off, turn around and freewheel back to town.
Hello and welcome to another Desert Island Disc Breaks. I'm Hannah and this week I'm here with...
Charlie Hobbs.
Charlie Hobbs. Now then, this is a bit of a special edition because you might refer to it, Charlie, as you are successfully completing your working career.
That's what I used to... when I successfully completed a marriage.
I know. So is this a euphemism?
Well, you've got to look on the positive side, haven't you?
Charlie is retiring. We can exclusively reveal to you in the hottestly anticipated news of the bike industry today.
But like many things I do, I'm not doing it properly. This isn't proper retirement. This is semi-retiring really badly because you don't need a lot of money to be poor and ride your bike all day. That's so, basically the gist of it. And
yeah.
Should I just tell you?
Well, I'm sure you'll get to that because I'm sure you'll use it as a free marketing opportunity.
Sure.
No doubt. But so you're certainly retiring from having bosses or any of that. You've had a little taste of it. I know you used to have a boss way back when that possibly drove you into the bike industry. So we will probably come to that in a
cool.
minute, because Desert Island Disc Breaks is where we prepare to wash you up on an island of your design to spend the rest of your days. So we're going to talk through the bikes of your life.
Cool. Where are we going to start?
We're going to start with, when did you learn to ride and what was your first bike?
Around 1976. There was a small, dark red kind of roadster thing, you know, but just a bike, because
uh-huh.
that's all we had back then. I was about 4 or 5 years old. And I took it out of the garage by myself without adult supervision. And it turns out adult supervision is, you know, something I sometimes need.
Heath.
And so within no distance at all, you know, without stabilizers, learning to ride by myself, I had crashed into the back end of a barricade of old ladies who were just going about their business, some neighbors. Okay. So that was my first bike. I picked up a scar on my... I think it's on my right eyebrow, which is still there. That was off a manhole cover. So that was my first outing, solo outing, running over old ladies and needing stitches in my face.
And at that point, there should probably have been some kind of social work intervention. You should probably be entered into a program, and society might have not been better.
But do you know, as a child, in your, you will one day be my age. I think I put that very diplomatically.
I'm not that far off.
Well, I'm not, it'd be inappropriate to specify, wouldn't it? But yeah, back then in the 70s, kids were feral. We went up the woods and set fire to stuff, and things that get you locked up nowadays were considered wholesome activities back then. So
some of them weren't, and indeed people have been locked up for. So the 70s wasn't all good.
No.
So did you ride bikes all the way through childhood and into adulthood?
Yeah, never stopped. Yeah, all the way through. And my off-road riding predates BMX, but predates the UK wave of BMX. BMX goes back to the 60s, if not earlier in the States. And it predates mountain biking in the UK as well. And I had this, we had tracker bikes, which are basically roadsters with cow horns on them. You whip off the front brake for no reason. You spray it without removing any components. So you've got paint on your tires, paint on everything. And we had a slight downhill run in the woods, Ackender Woods, Alton, Hampshire, if anyone's local. And there was a lump to launch off of a root right at the lip. And so 1979-ish at age 7, I could go and land beyond the roots of the big tree. I went back in late 90s in the full suspension FSR. I couldn't jump as far at 25 years old as I could at 7 years old. And then I went back again to the same spot, and it was all overgrown. And I thought, Alton, you've just got rubbish. You're a rubbish town full of rubbish kids. And then I went a little bit further into the woods and found a massive jump spot. And so, yeah, Alton is still rad.
And so did you ever buy a bike with your own money? What was the first one?
The first, those trackers, they cost 30 pence. You swapped them for sweets and, or an Action Man or something. I never spent more than a pound. So the first bike I bought was a Rally Mirage. That would have been around 1989-ish, I guess. And it was a 23-inch frame, which is a whopper, but that's how things were. And the seat stays were sort of spot welded to the sides of the seat tube. So normally they're pushing to the back. They sort of join on the back, so they got something to push against. But because Rally were just using their basic road bike understanding to make mountain bikes, they put them on the sides. And so after a few landings, they'd just pop off and you'd have a soft tail for 5 to 10 meters. And then you had a folded bike. So I got
two sort of prongs that were perfectly placed that impale you on the back of your knees as well, I'd have thought.
Yeah. the bike folds up before you're rolling around before you get pronged. Yeah, that was great days. So I was a student and or unemployed, and me and my mate Dan, we would throw a bag, lash a rucksack down to the rear rack and go off and sort of I should put this diplomatic about incrimination. The film Easy Rider? it was a little bit like that in some ways.
So would that be your first memorable off-road ride? Or was there one before that that made you go, this is it. This is where I want to be.
Well, prior to that, 1986-ish, my scout group, we went to the Lake District for a 2-week summer camp. We went to Chapel Style in Langdale Pass and rented mountain bikes. And they had drum brakes.
In 1986?
Yeah. I'll tell you when it was, because there's a photograph of me. I was wearing a big Audio Dynamite t-shirt. So if you Google when E equals MC squared, the big Audio Dynamite song came out, that was the summer.
I'm Googling it right now. But that sounds quite forward thinking for a scout group in 1986.
Not really, because as a scout group, we were already taking our BMXs off on days, days out and things like that. So we were riding off road before mountain bikes.
But to have a hire fleet in 1986, that's pretty.
Well, I've been back And the business is no longer there.
Well, it's 1985 that was released. So it would be 1985, 1986,
And so I've been back. I like going back. And I went back and I found a building they hired from. And it's now someone's garage. I think it's probably someone's garage back then. And I retraced the route that we rode. And so I did that as a dog walk. And then I went back on a 690 KTM off-road motorcycle because some of it's Green Lane. I thought, this is good. You know, 40 years has passed and I'm still doing it, but now I'm riding this monster motorbike and upsetting ramblers, whereas previously I was just a snotty little kid upsetting ramblers.
I wonder whether anybody listening recalls this Langdale bike hire in the mid-80s and went riding, because, I mean, that must have been pretty early in the off-road UK bike hire fleet world.
Definitely. But at the time, I don't think any of us had seen, until that week, I don't think any of us had seen a mountain bike. And if we had, it might have been on TV, but we hadn't seen one in the flesh. We certainly hadn't been one, and it would have been a year later when Dawes, saw the first Dawes mountain bike. Can't remember what that was called. People would be able to comment on the bottom of this. Someone will remember that Dawes mountain bike.
Yes.
And if we pick a
name and a date and things, that somebody will say, no, I think you'll find.
Yes, let's stay vague. The retro bike people are very precise. Very, very precise.
Well, so that's a first memorable off-road ride. What was the first mountain bike then that you owned?
That was that purple Rally Mirage.
Yeah.
So, but you know, you say proper mountain bike. Plastic canty brakes, plastic levers, 3x7 gearing. I think it came with 1.9 tyres, which was standard then, 1.95. Neon yellow bottle cage, obviously, because 80s. And I got loads of miles on it. Because I tell you, nothing's better for your surfing or your skateboarding or your cycling than being unemployed, which is kind of where I'm going back to. It dawned on me the other night at the skate park. So hold on. I can go surfing or cycling or every day.
Okay. I can't, you know, this is hard for me because I am basically never going to get to retire. So I'm struggling through gritted teeth here.
Read a book called The 4-Hour Work Week and take a mini retirement every 3 months. Because there's no point quitting work at 67, getting your 200 quid a week from the government and going, yeah, I'm going to go and climb Everest. Yeah, I'm going surfing. No, you're not. You're 67. You ain't, you know, you're done.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Oh, that's going to upset everyone, isn't it? We're going to get lots of older members complaining about my attitude now and telling me that they still cycle 100 miles every weekend.
Yeah, well, yes, but I would equally, you know, much as I love this job, I would definitely not struggle to fill my time where I retired. That always confounds me that people say that they don't know what to do with all their time now they're retired. I wasn't retired. I had small children, but I didn't work for a few years in any kind of paid employment, and I had no trouble at all in filling my days riding bikes with children and gardening and picnicking and whatever.
But life admin, when I take a day off, I mean, like, oh yeah, I'll take a day off, I'll go out and do something. And then before I've got out of bed, enough life admin has piled up, but the bins need to go out. Oh yeah, then there's that junk in the back garden that needs to go to the dump. Oh, I'm meant to pick this up. Or can I drop someone off somewhere? And you're like, okay then. And oh, lo and behold, you know, it's time for a glass of wine and start cooking in the evening.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's 10:30 in the morning.
Yes. Well, you can't drink all day if you don't start in the morning.
Careful though, it's a slippery slope in retirement, yes.
Well, imagine that. Seriously, where kids go wrong is they go out and start drinking in the evening. And then by 4 a.m. or 1 a.m. or whenever it is, they are a disaster. So the thing to do is get all the important stuff out the way, you know, your bike ride and what have you. And then stop at the pub on the way home and drink around tea time. Be home by 7 and asleep by 9. And then you can do it all again the next day.
Oh, tucked up in bed by 9. You really are ready for retirement, Charlie. Okay, let's turn to sadder thoughts. What was the first bike that you had stolen?
This was the bike immediately after that giant purple rally. And it came to me as a frame set without the decals attached.
So it might have been stolen before it came to you.
No, it was a warranty job that went into a branch of Halfords and they didn't use it. And so they just put it in the bargain pile at something like £50 for frame of fork.
Right.
And it is meant to be a Saracen Tough Tracks, TUFFTRAX. However, the stickers weren't applied. They had the stickers, but they weren't applied. And I had scissors. So it was a Saracen Tart Fucks.
Right.
Or Fuchs, F-U-X, Tart F-U-X. So when it did get stolen, reporting it to the police it's called a what, sir? Let me spell it out for you. I had to catch a bus in Lycra to get home, which is something nobody should ever do.
So how did it come to be stolen then? If you were wearing Lycra, where had you gone without your bike?
I'd been out in the New Forest and I stopped in Bournemouth on the way home. And I locked it up, not to anything, because there wasn't anything. And I quickly ran into the shop and it was gone. Gone in 120 seconds sort of thing. I saw it again many years later over the other side of the harbour in Purbeck. And on a big, long, straight road. And saw it coming towards me. It was quite distinctive. Neon green fork, black frame and so on. And so I spun round and followed the guy for a moment. And like, yeah, that's my bike. But the back wheel was buckled, the rear brake was missing. And I thought, I'm going to end up in a fight with somebody who probably didn't steal it. And I don't want it. What am I going to do? Cycle home with a shagged bike over my shoulder. And I let it go.
Just walked away.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Well, when your retirement starts on this island, you get to design your island and play God. So what sort of rock and soil and vegetation and climate and things are you going to go for your lifelong island?
Mountainous, tropical, surrounded by waves. Things, fruit growing in trees and mushrooms growing in meadows and warm water, that sort of thing.
So nothing like the UK, basically.
Yeah. Think something like Hawaii, somewhere I've never been, but yeah, think tropical.
You haven't been to Hawaii?
No, it's really, really, really expensive.
Well, if you start in America and you've been there a few times.
Yeah, but this being in Hawaii is really expensive. There's plenty of places to surf in the world which are quieter. Maybe it's a nice island, maybe has an abandoned holiday camp. So I've stayed in those before. And it's kind of all very Scooby-Doo and quite fun. And maybe where the bar's been abandoned, but it's still stocked. That'd be handy. But no sharks, because I really hate sharks. Actually, I don't hate sharks. They're fine. But I really hate sharks when they swim under you. That's effing terrifying. And I've been run over. I've fallen off cliffs. But the thing when a shark swims underneath you, you have all the time in the world. Come up with some really effing useless plan which will make no difference. There's nothing you can do. And what's the word? The word is when something's A or B. They use the
binary.
Word binary. That's it. It's binary. It doesn't matter what you do. You're either going to get bitten and have the worst day of your life, or it's going to piss off. And it's only happened once, and it did piss off. But it's that's really yeah.
I think there is something
changing.
You could do in those moments while you're contemplating the shark. You could not cut yourself. Don't like just graze yourself in that moment. Don't play with knives.
Yeah. Don't move. Don't look like a seal. Don't wear a black shiny wetsuit.
Do you have a sort of 1980s coloured, multicoloured wetsuit for that purpose?
No,
you should.
It's actually about the silhouette when they look up from beneath, because your feet sticking out the back and the shape of the board, you look like a seal. So sharks, nothing wrong with them, but stay away from me. So my eyelid will be shark free.
Okay, I'm with you there. Yeah. I'm quite scared of the sea altogether. I got caught in a rip. I was quite scared, and then I got caught in a rip, so then I was more scared.
Yeah. I rarely go into the sea without a surfboard. So if things go wrong, I've still got 70 litres of flotation to hand, and I'm tied to it. And so I can bob around for a bit, get smashed about for a bit, but you'll get out of there. But I have been smashed into a sea cave in Morocco, and that's pretty hairy. And that was the end of that board wetsuit. I had cuts to my hands, face, feet, and so on. So, yeah.
Yeah, you're not selling the sea to me. Really not.
So back to land then.
Yeah, back to land.
Back to land.
Yeah. So have we reached the point in your life where you're actually working with bikes yet? In the bike history, the time you had the Not a Saracen stolen, were you working in the bike world, or were you still eyeing up a professional career in a suit?
I was marketing financial services products from a tweed suit. I look like Vic Reeves with it's a nice sort of Chelsea red. Cherry red Chelsea boots. I wasn't a good fit in the corporate world. I'm the only person in the history of Liverpool Victoria Friendly Society to get tubed in their lunch hour. And I was in the lift with a surfboard and got some strange looks. And I just said, "It's okay, board meeting."
Oh God! So for a moment, this was like a sleep assist podcast. We're going to go and talk about the corporate world. And then it just became like a dad joke central.
I had a really good boss in the corporate world. And I was in the corporate world, and my job had gone from spreadsheets and direct mail to shooting TV adverts in Cape Town, which that's how I got exposed to that damn shark. And but I had started an eBay shop, which got called Charlie the Bike Monger, and it got bigger and bigger and bigger. And it came a point where it's like, hold on, I'm working in the evenings packing parcels till midnight. And it comes a point where your side hustle outgrows your day job. Then you kind of have to make this tough decision, which isn't really tough, but it can be a scary decision. But it's like, actually, I've got to go with this. And when I explained it to my old boss Guy, and I said, it's like imagine you have a puppy. And you play with it in the evenings. It's great. Now, my little puppy, my little toy business, is now an effing great big St. Bernard, and it's taking over the house. The downstairs toilet was full of track wheels. The shed was full of track frames. There was stuff under the sofa and everything. It literally taken over. And I said, I can't terminate my dog, my puppy, and sit at a desk and work for you, knowing that I could be having fun in the bike world. So that was the decision process and leaving. Good job, good boss. Unfortunately, he got shot dead, murdered in his bed a couple of years later. Yeah.
Blimey.
Yeah, shit happens. Yeah. Make sure your alarm, lock the doors and make sure your alarm works. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that in the UK?
Yeah, New Forest, which sounds really gnarly, doesn't it, now? It's a forest full of millionaires and National Trust and so on.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I left the corporate world and started Bikemonger. But whilst I was in the corporate world, I had these damn little projects. So I had these fun little projects. So I was the editor of Tire Print, the Dorset Rough Riders Mountain Bike Club magazine. 450 circulation. Not bad. Comparable with some recent UK publications. And I invented Orient Beering, which is like orienteering on bikes with hidden beer. You put good beer at the top of the hills, shit beer at the bottom. And you get points for finding beer, getting lost, and you get points deducted for being late. So I did that for a few years. And then it started looking really dangerous and people getting hurt. So, and then I started the Clunker Classic, which is a 4-mile downhill race in Exmoor over Porlock. You're not allowed a mountain bike. So children's bikes, post office bikes, road bikes, anything, but not a mountain bike. And that grew over 15 years and it was pretty messy.
How would you define a mountain bike for the purposes of somebody wishing for adjudicator's ruling?
It was,
I suspect your answer would be rude and tell them where to get lost. If they care about the small print that much. But
I turned up on a fat bike once because I had a plaster cast on. I said, I'm just joining in. And people were angry. It's like, well, I organized a race. It's a fat bike, not a mountain bike. So he let my tyres down. But that was brilliant. That was absolutely best racing ever. It's riding a 1930s post office bike with rod brakes, which are kind of like...
I've got one in the garage.
Yeah. So for the listeners, there's no cables. There's a set of bars and levers and linkages that gently rub some unsticky rubber against a rim.
Steampunk brakes.
Yeah. They're really fast. They're the fastest brakes you can get. If you want to win races, this is where those pros are going wrong with their giant rotors and their hydraulics. If they want to go fast, they need rod brakes and their downhill bikes.
I hope the really good ones don't brake very much at all, do they? They just really want them to work when they do brake.
Yeah. So yeah. The Clunker Classic, after 15 years, we got run out of town, literally told don't come back. And so that scene is, that run its course.
Okay.
So I was dicking around doing these silly little, daft events. And I still do that. Still do events with Dirt Dash.
See, I knew you'd get it in there.
With
free
Marcus
marketing.
Stitz. DirtDash.cc bikepacking events with Marcus Stitz around the world, single speeder and single track contributor. So I still do that. Enjoy it. It's basically scouting for adults. It's like doing your Duke of Edinburgh's award on a bike with a load of beer at the campsite, which is probably not that different to many scouts' experience of Duke of Edinburgh's award, just that nobody else knows they got the beer.
Well, okay, which bike did you wish you had but never owned? Is there one that got away? Or have you been lucky enough to have them all?
No, I always had knackered bikes that were only just hanging in there until I got run over. And then the insurance company paid for my first suspension bike. Having owned a bike shop and dealing with all kinds of niche brands and stuff, I could have anything I wanted.
All right.
So, but when I was younger, it was things like a mountain cycles, San Andreas, monocoque, first disc, first upside down foot. That looked amazing. I rode one at Battle on the Beach, just around the field. It's a pogo stick from hell. So all these bikes that you really wanted, you probably didn't. If I could have any bike, the best bike is the one you're riding, which I think is the same answer Charlie Kelly gave when talking to you a few years ago. It's the one you're riding now with your mates. That's the best bike. And the more retarded a bike, the more basic a bike, the more fun you have. And so every bike's an off-road bike. And that's why many, many years ago, I was on first name terms with Chris at Specialized Warranty, because I think it was free. A steel road bike snapped after I raced a child around a BMX track. I beat the 12-year-old, so it's worth it.
Boris. Sorry. Huh? There's just a slight similarity to Boris there playing rugby, no?
He challenged me. There's no contact. I didn't slam him down. He had a BMX. I had a road bike. Racing around the track. Okay, then. I cleared the small double, but the frame only lasted a week after that. So every road is an off-road. Every bike is an off-road bike.
Until it breaks.
Yes.
Well, okay, so on the flip side, is there a bike that you did own but you wish you hadn't?
Oh, the shortest owned bike I've ever had, and one of the nicest also, was a early Sousa Spearfish, maybe second generation. So they were the first full suspension 29ers. I think Gary Fisher released some years earlier, and then sort of they faded away. And it was specifically, I was a Sousa, I think I was the Sousa importer at times, definitely a dealer. Then I was the importer for a while. And it was to ride with Dirty Chris Reichel from Drunk Cyclist and Pat across the interior of Iceland. And so I sold my Pugsley fat bike to free up some cash and got a Spearfish. I did the local loop around Purbecks and Dorset, Corfe Castle, Swanage, and with my mate Ian, and we'd normally really evenly matched on certain bits to single track. And I was way ahead of him. And with 100 mil of travel, it was not a challenge and it was no fun. And then got a message from Chris saying, the sponsor who's going to give us the full suspension bikes has pulled out. It's now a fat bike trip, the Iceland trips. Now, yeah, I've just sold my fat bike. So I modified a Surly, put a fork on a Surly Krampus, which is a plus bike, so 29x3, and that was perfect for the trip. But that Spearfish, brilliant bit of kit, absolutely brilliant. You just don't need that much bike for the rolling hills of Dorset. And it was way overbiked. So that was the kind of bike I wish I hadn't bought. But now, living up here and having tested for single track a carbon Spearfish a couple of years ago, they are amazing if you've got the terrain for it.
So now you wished you did have it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, on your lush, almost like Hawaii but without the sharks, islands, you get to choose. You can either send an advanced trail team who will build you everything you want, or you can get a bare island, but you've got to build it all yourself. Now, if you send the advanced trail team, all you're allowed to do after that is fix the odd puddle. You're not allowed to build your own stuff. So
I would definitely go with the Virgin Island, the untouched one.
Yeah?
Because, how long does it take to get rescued?
Forever? You're not getting rescued. That's it.
I've got all the time in the world. I'll make my own trails.
So you don't mind a bit of digging.
I want something to do. And yeah, definitely take a... Yeah, why would you want someone to make your trails? That's like going to McDonald's rather than making a nice meal. Yeah.
You might not like digging. You might just want to pedal. Some people might. No? Okay.
No, definitely naked. Naked? That's the right word. No, untouched.
Okay. Getting some insight into the laws that there will be on this island at this point. Okay, well, so as well as digging trails then, you're going to have loads of time on your hands. So what skill might you learn? Doesn't have to be bike related. Maybe you'll learn this in your retirement with all the time you'll have on your hands.
I think it's carpentry. Carpentry is going to be the most useful thing because you're on an island and you've got time and you haven't got anything. And if you need something, you can make it out of wood. I think carpentry is the skill.
And can you do carpentry at all already?
I've fitted a kitchen and stuff like that. You know, it went okay.
It's funny how... I think that has been like the most popular in the Family Fortunes ranking of answers.
We asked the studio audience of so many castaways.
And they've all gone woodworking of some shape or loads of them have. And yet in our everyday lives, it appears that we don't make time for much by way of woodworking. And it's one of those things that you get someone in to do for you.
Yeah. If you've got time, why not learn a new skill? If you want a chair, table, shelter, all sorts. Yeah, woodworking. You have to learn it to survive anyway.
Well, and you only get to take one bike to the island to ride forevermore. It doesn't have to be a real bike that actually exists. If you wish to cobble together some particular features of other bikes, but what bike do you need to see you out the rest of your days?
29, rigid, steel, single speed, motorcycle, handlebars, big, like the Surly ones, big moto bars, and flat pedals, and mechanical discs. Because have other people, when they've done this, I've listened to a few, there's no point in having a Bluetooth dropper post or an e-bike or an AirShock, because that'd be great, but what do you ride next month when it starts running out of charge and things start falling apart? You need something that's going to go on and go on and go on. So it'd be my Surly, I've got the bike now. It's my sort of go-to for lots of things bike. So Surly single speed 29er.
Okay. I'm interested as to how you're going to get around this mountainous island that you've devised there with your single speed.
Single speeds, they are three speeds at least. So you got sit down and pedal.
Uh-huh.
Stand up and pedal.
Uh-huh.
Get off and push.
Uh-huh.
And then there's a secret one where you F everything off, turn around and freewheel back to town.
Okay.
No one speaks about one. It doesn't, on a single speed, you get the ratio right. And you can, I did single speed Arizona on a mountain near Tucson. I can't remember what it's called.
Mount Lemon.
That was the fella. We went from the base on tarmac to the bloody top. It was something like a 7,000 feet one go climb in bitching heat. There was snow at the top. And we made it up. Bam. Yeah, that's two Snowdons.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got, hundreds of us got there on single speed.
I couldn't go up there because there was too much snow. It was closed for snow. Yeah.
You don't go to Arizona. You didn't know.
No.
It's for snow.
No, I did not go for snow. And yet I got snow. Yes. Okay. So you've basically devised an indestructible bike there, but you are going to get an annual visit from a mechanic to get.
Oh, are you?
Yeah.
Oh.
They'll do a task for you. So, you know, what hateful job would you get them to do for you?
Oh, man, there's so many hateful jobs. There's some really hateful jobs that are satisfying, like things like seized bottom brackets in the bike shop back at Charlie the Bike Monger. We had a lever and it was at least a meter long. And two people would be bracing the bike. One person would be standing on the other end and be almighty great. And sometimes almost a cloud of smoke as it sort of bust out. Jobs I hate. Internal cable routing is awful. It's just, it's nice. It looks great. But, you know, if you've got work on the bike, it's a pain in the ass. I once had a guy come in with a specialized carbon road bike and then his gear cable was needed replacing and said, go get coffee. I'll see you in 20 minutes. An hour later, you know, so he was still waiting because I had to take some kind of plate out of the bottom bracket area and start taking the frame apart. It wasn't an e-bike. Just had to start taking the frame apart to do a simple cable swap. So that's the job I hate, but my bike won't have internal cables.
Yeah.
So probably best just to, I'll let him swap out the pads.
Okay.
Swap out the pads, fresh sealing, and pop a new bottom bracket in. I'll probably run it on a square taper, so he'll only need to turn up every 3 or 4 years.
Okay, so you don't feel like you're going to be missing the human contact then on this island?
I'll draw a face on a volleyball. I'll go the traditional. I'll have a Wilson. I'll find myself a Wilson.
So he doesn't fill you with horror and dread then, the idea of having lots of time to yourself alone?
Well, I've done some of the cycling I've done, and motorcycling I've done is alone. It's been sometimes out of being a bit Billy No Mates and everyone's either getting divorced, breaking a leg or can't be asked or whatever. And sometimes it's deliberate. And when you surf alone, your style's different. When you cycle alone day after day, you have yourself as company and you like realize quite how mental you are as you chat away to yourself. And why am I thinking this? What's going on now? and you end up in a different world. I once saw a dead monkey cycling by myself in Devon. Was it Devon? It was Devon. Just south end of Exmoor. Dead monkey in the road.
Really?
Yeah. And I was on a surly big dummy cargo bike, Maximist touring.
And you didn't scoop it up and put it on the back of the cargo bike?
I was going, I had a 15 kilogram canvas teepee because I had all this cargo space. So I went, you know, proper touring with deck chairs and things. And I passed something in the road and I thought, I said to myself, blimey, or words to that effect, blimey, that looks just like a monkey. And I started putting the brakes on and I looked back and I'm not cycling this bike back up this hill, sod that. And so it sat in my head for a few years as the time I thought I saw a monkey. And then me and a friend, we cycled to the Clunker Classic and went past the same neighbourhood and Sustrans had put a route in through the grounds of a stately home. And on the side of the stately home, some kilometre from my monkey sighting, they had a cage of marmosets, something, monkeys.
Right.
Yeah. So I did see a dead monkey.
You didn't hallucinate the monkey.
But for years, I was sure, but maybe I've ridden too far, too hard, too long, and I probably should take a break. The monkeys of Devon are real.
So you have spent most of your working life in bikes, but obviously you also surf, and then you also ride motorbikes, and you also skateboard.
Yeah.
If you could only pick one, which would win?
Surfing. Oh, cycling. Is you including cycling in there?
Yeah.
Oh, bloody hell. Surfing's a real pain in the ass because you can spend... Oh, I've been all the way to Mexico and got four crappy waves and guns pointed at me twice. So the gun to wave ratio was utterly wrong. You know, it's a long way to go. And Homeland Security smashed the board up, even though it was wrapped up in a padded bag and bubble wrap and in a box. Surfing can be really, really unrewarding when every now and then you're right place, right time. So in Africa, Morocco, at breakfast, is strangers turned up and I said, hey, what are you guys doing here? They're from Brazil, Cape Town, Berlin, California. And the German said, tomorrow it is 6. And I said, oh, man, it's been 6 foot all day, all week. You missed it. He goes, no, meters. I said, okay. It's like 18, 20 foot. Yeah, that's the swell. Wait till it hits the reef. So after 30 odd years, I got to surf 30 foot tubes, 25 foot tubes, 20 foot, biggest houses. But then there's so much disappointment in surfing, but it's so intense. I think if I had to keep one, it'd be cycling. Because you can just get on a bike and go, even if it's raining. You don't have to wait and wait and wait for the right conditions. And cycling doesn't really have crowds. Surfing nowadays is so popular. You have to go further and further off the beaten track to find quiet places. So, you know, if you can get off a plane and travel for 2 hours, there'll be 100 other surfers there. Even getting up first thing in the morning doesn't help. Surfing in the winter, in the snow, in Cornwall, we still can get busy. So, yeah, I'd keep cycling for sure.
So what knocks skateboarding and motorbikes off then?
They're really hurty. So motorbikes, when things go wrong in a mountain bike, you just go, damn it. When things go wrong in a motorbike, it can be a lot more serious. So, but a lot of my motorcycling is off-road, with the Trail Riding Fellowship, which is like the Rambling Society, but with middle-aged blokes and motorbikes.
Uh-huh.
And that's, you know, he's just generally pootling along, you know, over the mountains, through rivers and having a bit of a laugh, but not, you can't really hurt yourself.
That Mind sounds you, quite like mountain biking.
It's pretty much mountain biking, but they do get through a lot of collarbones.
Okay.
And skateboarding, I skated last night. First time I skated vert in 6 months. Second time I skated vert in 6 months. Dropped in. And I thought, I'll just drop in on the edge of the bowl. I'll just drop in. Just the first thing I'll do. I'm not going to go and warm up. Just get the set away. Once I got the set away, because it is a little bit scary, everything will be fine. So I completely slammed. People came running over. Are you okay? Yeah. Quickly ran back up and went again. And like, yeah, I've got it. But skateboarding I'm 50, for 30 something years, I've just been managing my decline.
Okay.
Whereas with surfing, I think I probably peaked now, but that's probably due to lack of action, lack of activity rather than anything else. So you can surf well as an old man. You can have a nice sort of style, nice cruisy classic style. You don't have to sort of shred and rip.
Okay.
Yeah.
and still people will think you're cool.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, it's very cool. It is really cool. Or you're just sitting out, see bobbing around. But every 10 minutes, it's, you know, you're flying along, you know, wind flapping in the hair and carving around the place. Yeah. So yeah. It really is. But when it's perfect, it's life-changing. Time slows down when you're in the tube. And it's, you know, seconds. You're in the tube for maybe, I don't know, even when it's at its best, you know, 10 seconds. And it feels like 2 minutes. And when you come out the other side, your brain is completely reformatted, like someone's hit defrag.
I think there are drugs that do the same sort of thing, but have less sharks. Fewer sharks.
There are, without a doubt. But, yeah, and it's also the hunt for surfing. You're always hunting. And as a when you really are, and I guess people are kind of spoiled nowadays with trail centres. But in the past, before all the trail centres, you'd be like riding along, you see this little trail, tiny little, just some tracks going off through the bracken. You're like, why has someone gone over there? So you sort of try and follow them, and like, aha, I found a secret downhill run. And so the hunting, the fishing, the searching for perfect waves and trails, there's a lot of similarity there.
And you're not going to take up fishing then on your desert island?
Yeah.
Appeal? Or yep, in your retirement? Definitely.
I used to fish, but I didn't like killing them. I quite like eating them, but I didn't like the bother of... After a few beers with my old mate Dan, we'd go fishing and never catch anything because we weren't really fishing. We were drinking beer on some rocks in Dorset. But every now and then you'd kind of get rudely interrupted by some suicidal fish who was, you know, accidentally got himself hooked by the two worst fishermen in Dorset. And we're like, oh, shit. And then after a few beers, so the first time we had to kill a fish, it was a disaster. We were almost in tears. There's blood everywhere. The fish still wasn't dead. And it's like, I didn't come here for this. No, we're just meant to be smoking and drinking on a rock. Yeah. So, you know, it's not, fishing is not about the fish. But if you told your wives that, like, oh, yeah, on Friday night, I'm going to hang out with Dan, but going up to... sit in the car park and get wasted. It should be, they'll be like, you what? If you go, oh, we're going fishing. Oh, okay, that sounds good. And off you go.
I would see through your ruse and I would choose the fishing. Yeah, I'm quite into the whole fishing, not catching thing.
Yeah.
I too get quite distressed when I actually catch a fish. For a moment, it's exciting. And then the reality of having to get the fish off the hook and not kill it and put it back or... I've never caught one that's big enough to warrant killing. So,
a lot of fishing is about the chase, isn't it? Fishing is not called catching; it's called fishing. And I like fishing. I don't like catching.
Well, you might have to do some catching to survive on your island.
Yeah.
Okay. So, what book would you take with you?
It's a book I haven't read. It's called About Face. And so the movie Apocalypse Now, a Vietnam movie, there's a Colonel Kilgore in there, and he gets the guys, they're the cavalry, they have helicopters. He gets his guys to invade a village because they got good surf and sat around the fire the night before with one of his advisors saying, oh, it's pretty hot in there. That's, you know, as Charlie's point, as Vietnamese got control of it. And he says, Charlie, don't surf. Then they fly in playing Flights of Valkyries, bomb the hell out of this village so they can go surfing, and then they get some fire, so they called in the Air Force and they napalm this entire tree line. And it, in the movie, I think they actually did, because it is such a convincing, this is before CGI and so on. And he stands there with things exploding around him, and he says, I love the smell of napalm in the morning. And so that guy was a real guy, based on a real character, who was a Californian body surfer. He joined the army, became a decorated pin-up superstar general in Korea and then Vietnam. He got disillusioned with the whole thing, thought it was a scam, because young men were being trained in Alaska and then flown for a few weeks and being flown to a jungle, which is not really the same kind of environment, little training and being killed. So he held a press conference. He held a press conference without the permission of the government or the army. Ooh. Just held it himself. somewhere in Vietnam and said, this is shit. This isn't working out. This is a farce. The American government tried killing him, assassinating him after that. They put a grenade under his seat. It was Jeep, hooked up to the accelerator pedal. And the hydraulics on his Huey helicopter were also tampered with. So after two assassination attempts, which he believed was by his own side, he quit, went to Mallorca. I think he went to Mallorca, went to some Caribbean island. Not Caribbean, there.
That's not the Caribbean, yeah. That's the right. Okay.
Mediterranean island, same, not the same thing at all. Went to Mediterranean island where there were a bunch of people avoiding the draft and smoked a lot of weed. Then he went to Australia and became a duck farmer. Then he became a campaigner for nuclear disarmament and won a UN Peace Prize. So this story, this book, this real book is based on Apocalypse Now, that character is based on a real guy. And he went from warmonger to peacemaker, a full U-turn. And it's also, quite importantly, because I'm a strategist, it's quite a thick book, it's chunky. I've got it at home. I haven't started it yet because it's...
Doesn't sound like you need to read it. It sounds like you know the story already.
Well, this is just what I picked off Wikipedia before I bought the book. and so it's not only is it a thick book, it's printed on quite cheap paper, which looks quite absorbent.
Right.
So I can see that having toiletry values on the island.
Okay.
Yeah.
Multi-purpose.
Choose a thick book. We've made, printed on some sort of blotting paper type material. And you're, multitasking, yeah.
Well, I hope it doesn't prove to be that it's like Wikipedia's done the movie trailers and you've now seen all the highlights and there's nothing left of interest in between.
It's about 2 inches thick.
Right.
There's got to be more to it than that, yeah.
Okay.
And I think that was just the landmark. So it was just the point. But his thinking around there and on that journey, I think that would be interesting.
What takes you to being a duck farmer? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, ducks are cute.
Well,
why would you want to farm
them? They're really stupid. They'd be really hard work to farm. Yeah.
Do you think?
Yeah, I used to have them. Yeah. Okay, so you get to take one album with you. So what album would you take?
I was thinking Dark Side of the Moon by Pink Floyd.
That's quite a cliche.
Yeah, because it is so good. It is really, there's so much detail in it. And it's just as a little tangent, everyone else, if you like the album, check out Dub Sides of the Moon by the Easy Star All Stars. And also check out Dark Side of the Moon, covered by The Flaming Lips with Henry Rollins.
Oh, I like the sound of that. Yeah.
It's really grindy, industrial, and edgy and scary. And yeah, but that's what I was thinking. And then I thought, no, this is not practical. So I'm going to go with the greatest hits of the Bonzo Dog Doodah Band. They had a hit, which was I'm the Urban Spaceman.
Yes.
Which is their hit, which we can ignore. But most bands just ignored a hit. But amongst many songs, they have songs about hunting tigers, and it's full of useful advice, quite practical. Apparently they bite and scratch, So everything I know about hunting tigers, I've learned from Viv Stanshaw on the Bonzo Dog Doodah Band.
So this is going to be your guide to survival, then?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. There may be a vacancy on the island soon, folks. Charlie's retirement may not last very long.
You want to see my pension statement? I can't live long.
Well, okay, so you don't need your pension to buy this bit. You can take one luxury item to your island. So you can't use it to escape or communicate.
It would have to be a surfboard, was my first thought.
Wow.
So with a surfboard, pick something like a 9-2 pre-gunny single fin, something kind of good all-round board. You can fish from it. They are small boats. But and all those weights all to myself forever, or until I die, whichever comes first. And so if I was rescued, you know, when Tom Hanks gets rescued and cast away, he's a bit shabby.
Uh-huh.
You know, he's a bit, I will be in fantastic shape and really happy when I get rescued, if I get rescued. But then I U-turned all of this because surfboards need repairs. And I went, surfing's older than Christianity. There are boards and museums that are thousands of years old. And they were hidden when the religious folk turned up in Hawaii after Captain Cook and outlawed surfing. And they were made of wood. And depending on your hierarchy in Hawaiian society, the size of your board and the wood used would differ. So the kings, the Hawaiian kings, royalty used willy willy trees. W-I-L-I.
I can't think why you remember that.
So, and I've made solid wooden replicas of ancient surfboards, and they're a sod to surf. They're really, really difficult. No fin. They go very fast. They go very sideways. They've got their flotation. They're really, really tricky to surf. They're called Alaias. And so I've got all the time in the world. Surfing is kind of easy once you've got it, but surfing finless wooden planks of wood is really tricky. So that would be something where you're not going to get bored of it because you're going to, it's such a difficult thing to do. And so my luxury item would be a woodworking toolkit.
A woodshed. A proper workshop. A man cave.
A man cave of stuff so I can make surfboards out of wood.
Okay.
And then I can fish from them, I can do it, and I can go surfing and so on. But you've all the time in the world, make your own boards. Because they're fun to make. The last one.
Well, I would totally have a wood shop if as a luxury item if I was going to a desert island. So I'm going to grant that on the basis that that means that if I have to go to a desert island, I will be able to have the same.
That makes sense. That does make sense, yeah. This is a crooked system, isn't it? This is...
you mentioned, because you are never shy to escape a... Oh, no, that's not the sentence I'm looking for. Mark can edit that out. You're never one to miss an opportunity for some promotion. So you did mention your Dirt Dash event.
Yes,
I think we've got this far without a mention of bum butter.
Of what?
Bum butter.
Oh, pardon, my headphones aren't working. What did you say?
Did I say mingerine? Oh, no, I definitely didn't, because that's mine.
Edit that out.
That's mine.
Got to edit that out.
You can't edit that out. That was my suggestion, folks, for the women's version. Beer might have been involved.
It was. from here on, I'm running Dirt Dash events, so overnight bikepacking events in Marcus Stitz. We've got a new event going into the Yorkshire coast next summer. We just run a new event in Scotland in the Caterham area. That went really well. That was a really nice event, apart from one collarbone. It's collarbones. Keep cocking things up. It's brilliant work. You live in a van. Marcus will be out sorting out the route and stuff, and there's all kinds of logistics, and event management's a really tricky business and should be quite stressful. And there's not a lot of sleep. It's hard work. But then there's lots of planning, but generally it's a week on the ground. And so, you know, a week in Dorset, a week in Scotland, a week here. It's really nice work. And it doesn't, it's very different to 9-to-5-ing.
Uh-huh.
And then the other business is Happy Bottom Bum Butter. So that is a side hustle, which has just kind of got bigger and bigger and bigger. And I've made some smart moves. So if you buy a tub of bum butter from me, sometimes I handle it and pop it in a jiffy bag. But I have another way of doing that, where I pay another organization to send it out. And so from an iPhone, I can copy and paste your order from one system into the next and hit send. And I can do that anywhere with Wi-Fi or mobile reception. So when I was in France surfing a few weeks back, I'd be in my deck chair with a coffee or a glass of wine and spend some time each day shuffling around the orders and replying to emails. But I can run that from anywhere, which is kind of... So if you want to know how to do that, buy the book or the audio book, The 4-Hour Work Week by Tim Ferriss, and it'll show you how to...
I thought you were about to start offering yourself as a consultant there.
Nah, Tim's already nailed it years ago. So he works 3 months flat out, and then he'll take a 1 month mini retirement. And in that 1 month, he'll go tango dancing in Buenos Aires, racing motorbikes in Europe, climbing mountains. And Monday morning, 9 till 1 p.m., something like that, at 4 hours, he'll work just to keep on top of everything. And so he'll take mini retirements whilst he's still young enough to climb, surf, tango dance. And retiring when you're 67 and thinking, yeah, I'm going to go and surf big waves, that ain't going to happen. And he's pretty much written a manual on how to do that. And after years and years of working hard and building things, building businesses, I've actually gotten a place where I can run Bun Butter remotely for weeks and weeks at a time.
Right.
So that's the plan.
Well, screw you. On you go to your island. I'm trying really hard not to swear. This is tricky at this point for me. So thank you for being on Desert Island Brisbane.
Before we wrap up, one final word. And this came, this isn't my story. It's someone else's story, but it's something that's really shaped my decision-making. So a guy makes LB Fowson, Australian, scrounges some money from the Australian government. He's a hippie and a surfer, and he makes a movie in 1972 called Morning of the Earth. When it's released on VHS in the 80s, he does a little intro. He stood in front of the camera, he's got his red surfboard under his arm, and the guy behind the camera says to him, how did this movie come about? Where did it come from? You know, why did you do this? And he said, I wanted to hold a mirror up to the world and show them themselves and show them where they're at, because where they're at isn't where it's at. It's not back there in the city with a BMW and a giant TV. It's out here, it's surfing with the dolphins, picking fruit from the forest and climbing the mountains to see sunrise. And this is the zinger. This is the killer line. He says, people spend their lives pursuing things to make their lives better, but those things are not better than life.
I feel like I shouldn't speak now. And we should just go to church or something.
Just fade out now. So, I'll leave everyone with that final, what's the word? What do priests and stuff do?
Mass rites, Charlie's not dying yet, is the plan.
Charlie's an evangelist of... what's the word? My last sermon. Is that a sermon? I don't know. That's some life advice, kids.
It won't be the last we hear of you, I'm sure. But yes, enjoy your retirement. Fuck you. Mark, can you just put some beeps in there so that I can swear? Because it's really... I don't have the... vocabulary.
Anyone can do this. Right, we can all work remotely nowadays.
Mark's listening and editing. So Charlie says that I've only got to work for a few hours a day for most of the year. That's what you said, isn't it, Charlie?
Yeah. And you can there's a municipal campsite on the west coast of France. For €15 a night, you get a 10 meter by 10 meter pitch with Wi-Fi and electric hookup. Park your van, put your tent up. If you stay for 20 nights, you knock a third off. £10 a night to be a stone's throw from the surf, in the sunshine, eating baguettes, drinking wine, and working.
No, you're not allowed to work there because Brexit.
No, work. You're just tinkering with a laptop, aren't you? Really? You're allowed to do work remotely in Europe, aren't you?
No.
Really? Don't tell anyone. Does anyone listen to this?
I think you're allowed to go to Portugal. And Portugal has good big waves and they have a digital nomad scheme. So that's where you should head.
Oh, so I'm not allowed to do the thing I'm about to do?
No.
Well, Sodom. If European citizenship was such an important and real thing, a bunch of crooks with a red bus wouldn't be able to steal it from you.
Oh, that's another point. So you'll be on Alistair Campbell's podcast next week. Why was the bus red? Surely it should be blue.
No, do you remember the big red bus? $350 million to the NHS?
Yeah, but it should have been blue, surely.
Red is the international colour of a sail. Okay. And distress. And
yeah. Anyway, okay. Well, I think we're ready to send you off to your island now. Sorry.
Thank you. How am I getting there? Just get thrown over, just push me off the side of the...
Push you over the edge with your woodshed.
SS single track.
Slide.
Cool. Okay.
Well, thanks for being here.
No worries.
Bye.
Whee. Splosh.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.